Welcome to La Liga Weekly. 30 match rounds in and Los Morados lead the way. 8 clear with 8 to play after Rodrigo's double against Los Blancos. Oh, it's all very confusing, isn't it? Until you realise Real Madrid wore purple against Athletic in the hope of making a few quid. Specifically through their collaboration with Y3, which I discovered is a person, an 80-year-old fashion designer to be specific. You can buy the shirt for a mere £170 sterling, which is a real bargain when considered against the travel shorts, which come in at £235. And have you considered adding a collared jacket at a mere £650? I think the plan is to tell Kylian Mbappe he has to buy his own kit and sort out any FFP issues. Barca fans laughing along before taking their €200 wash bags to the bathroom. The old president was giving away for free for all the new signings, and that's where all the money went. Rayo Vallecano got their own George at Asda range, but you can't buy it online. You write to them, they send you the pattern in the post, and you make your own. All of which is designed to take away from a not-so-bumper weekend of action. Total of 17 goals in 10 games. At least we have fun, Girona back. And we've got a relegation battle. Cadiz won, one defeat in 5. Spare a thought, though, for Osasuna fans. They're losing their much-loved boss, Hagoba Arasate. And they wasted their departing manager bounce on Almeria. So much for the Pepe Mel renaissance. Play the circus music. Patreon.com/LTEL for all the Patreons. Thank you to the new Patreons we've got. And we need new ones as well. It's only a couple of pounds, dollars, euros. Considerably less than you'll be spending on your new purple Real Madrid kit. Right, Terry, where do you want to start? Shall we start with Real Madrid? You commentating that game for La Liga TV at the weekend. Purple shirts aside, Rodrigo was the difference, wasn't he? He took one magnificent goal and one that was brilliantly. I loved the second goal as well. Took it brilliantly. Had loads to do when he got the ball. And in the end, he makes it look like it's rolling in. It's a brilliant performance.
It was. I mean, he's some player. I mean, he's slightly been in the shadows of Vinicius, who gets more of the attention, and he's probably more established. I think we no one expects Vinicius to be left out of the attacking lineup if and when Kylian Mbappe signs. And everybody kind of assumes if there's going to be a casualty in the front line, it might be Rodrigo. But he is some player, and he's slightly more versatile than Vinicius. But we saw in this game how much he enjoys playing in the same position as Vinicius and Mbappe. And Ancelotti's wise enough to know that he's got three super talented players there, and he will somehow find a way for them all to play. I think Rodrigo on the right, Mbappe down the middle, Vinicius down the left would be the solution. But what you get from Real Madrid, even in this match, when the starting lineup was announced and you get the teams and it's a similar story for most of their fixtures. You're thinking, well, who's going to be playing where in the midfield and attacking lineup? And they kind of went with a 4-2-3-1 in this one. And it was clear, I thought it was a 4-2-3-1 with Brahim Diaz being the most central of the attacking players. And Rodrigo down the left, Valverde on the right, Bellingham playing just behind, and then a pivot of Tchouaméni and Toni Kroos. That's how I saw it. But they just kept swapping. But I think it was pretty much a constant that, I mean, there were times when I say swapping, it was Bellingham in the centre forward position. Sometimes it was Rodrigo. The majority of the time, I thought it was Brahim Diaz. But they are a really good team. I mean, they really do have good players. They weren't at their best in this game. It was classic Real Madrid that they've been doing for 100 years, probably. Mm-hmm. The Athletic start the game better. With 7 or 8 minutes in, Real Madrid have barely got across the halfway line. And in their first attack, they have player. And they've always had players capable of just ripping apart a defence. But when you saw the movement from the other players, they're so quick. And the movement off the ball is full of intent, and you're an Athletic player. You're easing into the game. Your team's at possession, and all of a sudden, Bellingham's making a run from deep. Fernandinho was overlapping down the left. Rodrigo's got the ball at his feet. Brahim Diaz started to move off, and he was on the right wing with a crossfield pass to the left. The game and defence was completely opened up, and it was so incisive and so quick, so rapid. And in saying that, there's still plenty of work, a lot of work for Rodrigo to do. But once he jinks inside, it was an instinctive, natural finish. He's full of talent. And that then controls the narrative of the game, that Athletic Club then think, well, everything was going right until then. And now every time they attack, we're going to be fearful that one of these fast players is going to burst past us with or without the ball. And Real Madrid pretty much controlled it from then on in without playing particularly great. And then, as you say, the second goal, was so many decisions he has to make when he cuts inside. You know, does he go outside the defender and cross it? No, he chooses to go inside, which is always going to be his natural tendency. Then does he go across the goal to whip the finish in towards the far post? No, he chooses to whip it across the near post and beat the goalkeeper, a good Isabella. So there were so many decisions, but he makes it look so easy. And Real Madrid are a really, really good team. And they're only going to get better because of the ages of the players. Athletic Club was slightly disappointing. I can't believe... I mean, we respect Ernesto Valverde so much. I mean, he's doing a fantastic job this year and he's always done a great job wherever he's been. But sometimes when you're watching football, we're analysts and we're looking at it and we're meant to be to try and give some knowledge that people can't see. Surely everybody sees that Toni Kroos can't be allowed just to roam around midfield and don't go anywhere near him. I mean, that is every spectator that's in the stadium or goes to any game of football. There are blindingly obvious things that even if you haven't got your pro license or your A license or stuff, you're looking and thinking, someone tackle or someone mark Toni Kroos because literally nobody got near him. And I find that remarkable that a manager of Valverde's stature hasn't said to Sanset, would be the obvious one, who's playing slightly deeper than Guruzeta, try and get near him, try and stop, because he was just spraying the ball out, spraying the ball all about the pitch. Under, he could play for another 10 years like that.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be a totally different kettle of fish when someone's close against him. So the pass to him isn't as easy and as obvious. Then when he does receive the ball, he gets his head up, he can turn, he can pick a pass. And of course, Toni Kroos can pick a pass. You know, it was astonishing that they allowed that to continue for so long. I know there was an element of maybe they were outnumbered in midfield, but they make a change, you know, bring Sanchez deeper. He hasn't got dropped that much deeper because Toni Kroos is playing pretty much in the same position. Just ask Sanchez to do something different when his team are out of possession. And that's not me moaning at the player. It's me, you know, complaining that the blinding obvious sometimes that we're all watching it and thinking, do something. It was remarkable that, you know, Toni Kroos was allowed
to continue. The next game is Manchester City, because they don't play this weekend. Obviously, there's Copa del Rey, isn't it, this weekend? So it'll be a different challenge for them against Manchester City, who you know, turned out the most boring game of football I've watched this season at the weekend. They're not in great form at the moment, City, are they? But, I mean, it's brilliant prospect, that game, isn't it? I honestly can't call it. Have you any thoughts?
No, I can't call it. And I will, in the build-up, I'm sure I have to defend Real Madrid in various interviews that I'm asked to do, because everybody assumes in the UK that Man City are going to win the Champions League again. And I think these are the two best teams in the competition. I genuinely do. So I think the winner of this has a really good chance of winning it. Do I think it's a foregone conclusion? No, I don't. I'm going to spend the time defending Real Madrid. It's the Champions League, so they come alive in this competition every year anyway. And I think they're in really good shape. And I don't think City are as good as they were last season. I think that's evident. So I think there is the gap has closed. And the only people in the UK that think that Real Madrid have a chance would be Manchester City and Pep. They know that. They're not daft. So this is not me, you know, giving them criticism. They know that they're against probably the last team they wanted to draw at this stage would be Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the rest of the competition. I think that Man City and Real Madrid would have to take in of anybody else left in it.
Yeah.
You know, Bayern Munich are not in great shapes, and there's Atletico Madrid and Dortmund and PSG and Barcelona. I think the two outstanding teams are playing in this next round. And Pep will know that. I understand his complaints about the 9 days of preparation that Real Madrid now have. But it's not Real Madrid's fault. They'd rather be playing next week, I think.
Yeah, they'd rather be in the Copa del Rey final, wouldn't they? Yes.
Think if not, they'd rather be playing a league game. So it has its own challenges for Ancelotti.
Yeah, and it's not a lot of football, is it, in a couple of weeks because of the international break? Yeah.
I mean, some of the players didn't play much international football. Some do, of course. A lot of them do at Real Madrid. And it's going to be in the space of a month, you know, about two or three games they've had, which is not what they're used to. But it does give them time to prepare. Ancelotti will probably, I would like to think, he'll even go and watch one of the Man City games that Man City have got coming up over the next week or so. That would make, I mean, he can watch footage of it, but it's not a long flight to Madrid to go and watch Man City play. FA Cup semi-final is one of them, isn't it, against Chelsea? That's next weekend. There's a midweek game this week as well. So they've got two games before they play Real Madrid. It will give them time to watch, I think, the staff to prepare for a game. And because what you get City have played at the weekend against Arsenal. They've got a midweek game, I'm sure they're playing. And then they've got the Cup semi-final next weekend. So that they don't get time to prepare per each team that they're facing. Real Madrid do on this occasion.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone's fit. Militao was back, which is a massive bonus. I don't consider he's going to be in the right shape to play against the first leg of Man City. Probably not the second. It's going to take him a while to get up to speed, but it was pleasing to see him back. All round, it was a good day for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Athletic Club, I was kind of forgotten this narrative on football. I was in the studio with Tony Padilla on La Liga TV this weekend, and it was interesting that he knows a lot. He's really knowledgeable, to be honest, with different stuff. So he was knowledgeable with all the Athletic Bilbao, the reaction of the supporters, and the choice top four or win the Copa del Rey. And unanimously, he said, and he hasn't heard one person say top four. It's all about the Copa del Rey and winning a trophy. And you kind of think back and think, I forgot what that used to be like. Mm. The supporters would rather win a trophy than win, you know, finish top four, because the narrative over the years has changed completely, isn't it? Top four is like winning a trophy.
I don't think it's that clear. I think if you genuinely polled a lot of supporters, they would, you know. And if you work in a club, I get it, because it secures your future. I mean, people literally jobs on the line, aren't they, within clubs?
Yep.
For being Champions League or not. But I don't know. I think if you ask supporters, honestly, I mean, well, anyone disagrees, feel free to get in touch.
No, I think it's a really interesting debate. Yeah. So they haven't won it since 1984, which is 40 years. I didn't realise that, because since we've been working on Spanish football, they've been there or thereabouts. They've been in finals and they've won Super Cups and stuff. And I'm thinking, I was astonished that they haven't won it since 84. So they would go down in history with this group of players if they win the trophy. So it was refreshing to hear that the Athletic supporters, unanimously want a trophy above top four. Yeah. And their performance had a degree of that at the weekend, I think, from Valverde. And I think that, you know, Yerry Alvarez came off early as well. So players were aware that they don't want to miss such a big game. It's a shame that at the moment we're not going to be able to see it legally on UK TV. I guess the attraction to TV companies here is it's not Real Madrid or Barcelona or Atletico Madrid or Sevilla or Villarreal or Valencia. It's Athletic Club against Mallorca, but it's going to be a good game to somehow try and watch. But I had that type of performance about them, Athletic Club, at the weekend. They just weren't at it, although their away performances aren't particularly good anyway. So it was a comfortable winning them for Real Madrid. And I think it's a long losing or not winning streak for Athletic Club against Real Madrid now. And we always say every year in the two games, tough game playing Athletic Club, but Real Madrid keep beating them.
Barcelona beat Las Palmas by a goal to nil. Philip, one of our patrons, happy to be back with the 1-0s. Should have been two, didn't it? Because Rafinha should have had another goal. Should have been three, because João Félix missed from in front of the goal. And also, Las Palmas made it easy because Baez, who've been so much full of praise for this season, I think that's a fairly clear red card, Terry. I don't think there's much controversy about this one.
Yes, it was a clear red card. It's not a cynical foul. I think he just makes a mess of trying to get there and misses the ball completely and upends Rafinha, who was involved in
10 foot in the air. Yeah,
all the way through the game, the disallowed goal that he scores the goal. I like Rafinha. He's growing on me. I've always thought he was a good player, and I spoke to people at Leeds, and they told me things about him that I didn't see. Unless I watch, we watch him every week. Well, no, and one of those was his work rate and his attitude.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that more and more. When he scores the goal in this game, he's playing midfield. And I think there is an element of, there is a place for him in this squad as a player who's a little bit more versatile than just being a wide player. And when he scores this goal, he makes a run from central midfield. And he's played there once or twice this season. He's then changed positions during the game and ended up in midfield. I think it's a position that he could get more games by playing. I think Lamine Yamal plays on the right, I think, now. And then I think Rafinha, he is a possibility of playing as a central midfielder, one of the three in midfield, particularly if you're attacking, and because he gets up and down the pitch, he makes this run from deep, gets him behind and takes his goal well. So it was a frustrating performance, from my point of view, from Barcelona, because they got so many decisions wrong in the final third. They shot when they should have passed. They passed when they should have shot. The quality of crossing wasn't particularly good. Sometimes they held on to the ball too long. There were so many aspects of their game that were lacking, yet so much was good until they got in that final third. So I think that was, and that's not the first time I've said that about Barcelona this season. And I mean, João Felix, he looks like he's actually, I wanted to see on the replay whether it hit a bobble or it came off a part of the foot that he didn't anticipate. It looks like he lifts the ball as well. It's not like he's, it should have been a straightforward punch, firm ankle into the goal. And it's across the face of the goal. It is literally an open goal. But the technique he uses, it almost looks like he's gone for the spectacular to hit the roof of the net. And he actually lifts it on purpose. It's not an accident. It's not a mishit finish. It's like he tries to lift it and, you know, smash it into the top of the goal. And he missed the opportunity. So Barcelona were good. And Las Palmas did well, considering that they were, you know, down to 10 men from the 24th minute. And they've been good this season, most of the season, in terms of defence. And they defend deep and they defend in numbers. They obviously are not going to issue much of a threat going forward. So Barcelona had to work a lot harder to get the goal. I mean, it was 30 minutes or so before the end of the match and they still couldn't wrap it up and get another one. But I think it's 5 clean sheets on the trot for Barcelona now. Somewhere that I saw that stat the week and I thought that crept up on me from nowhere.
Let me see. No, all right. Napoli. But yeah, in La Liga it is. Yeah, it is. Since Celta Vigo in mid-Feb.
So Felipe's right. The 1-0s are back, and they're at one stage before Real Madrid played. They were 5 points adrift. They're in second place. Kubasi played well again. Yeah. I said they didn't have much.
Can we to deal with. Clear up the offside? We can't clear up the offside. So they should have had a goal, basically, shouldn't they? So describe. Right. So the action is the ball gets played through. Rafinha is a mile offside. Fair enough. But the ball is played through to Lewandowski.
So it's a different direction. It's 20 metres away from Rafinha, isn't it? Yeah. To the right instead of Rafinha to the left.
Who's the defender? Is
El Coco.
Right, okay. So the two of them are running. Either Lewandowski, one of them touches the ball, and I'm not entirely sure which one it is. Don't know why it matters, because by the time one, either attacker or defender, play the ball, Rafinha is onside again.
Yep.
Gets the ball, scores. It's like they're looking for reasons to disallow the goal. You really have to work hard at a reason to disallow it.
Yeah, and I think the shame of it is that we all work on analysing these decisions and games and the laws of the games. But spectators in general believe that we're kind of on top of it. You know, each season it changes, but we kind of understand it. And everybody, that appears to be an onside goal. then the only thing you can look at is the, is it involuntary or voluntary touch from Sakoko that goes to Rafinha? Is it a second, is it the next phase? Is it still the same phase? But I think in general, supporters and people like us that watch the games think, oh no, there's a, it's a second phase. There's another touch.
That's very clearly that's not my interpretation of what that law is. I get the point of the law, right? So if you play, if a guy goes and stands 10 yards offside, and then the ball is played over the head of a defender and he jumps with an attacker and he's trying and he has to try and head the ball away. Yes. It flicks off your head because you're challenging and it goes behind. The guy offside, it does seem unjust that the guy who's offside then benefits from that and they say, aha, the last touch was off a defender. So they, quite rightly, they changed the interpretation a couple of years ago, didn't they? They made it clear. So that's not, you're not, he would be offside now. Because he played that ball under pressure. I get that. This is not that case, is it? This is a case where Sakoko and Lewandowski are, they're both actively playing that ball for real. And by the time they play it, Rafinha's onside.
Yeah, so I think therefore, the law is about decision. Does it affect the decision making of the defender if the player.
I get that. Because there was a classic one, Mbappe versus Eric Garcia, wasn't there, in the.
Yes,
and the Europa, what was it called? The Nations League final. Yeah, and that's fair enough because he's racing with Kylian Mbappe. He feels he has to play the ball. I get that, and it's unfair on the defender. This is not the case, is it? Sakoko, he's genuinely challenging Lewandowski for that ball. So whether it comes off his foot or Lewandowski's foot, the ball changes direction, and by that time, he's onside. So it's a goal.
Exactly. So I think anything that clouds the thinking of the average person that is watching the game that thinks they know the laws of the game, this looks to me like a mistake, and it looks to me like a reason to try and cancel a goal. We had a similar situation, we forgot to touch on that, in the Real Madrid game.
You're on the offside, the missing goal. the
missing penalty.
Yeah.
It was immediately you think he's offside, and then, oh no, Mikel Busquets has lashed that back towards his own penalty area. So he can't be offside.
Yeah.
And then the decision then should have been, is it a penalty? No, VAR has to look at that and decide. Play restarted immediately.
Yeah.
With no VAR checked. And they kept showing replays of Mikel Vesca clearly hammering the ball back, recklessly back towards his own goal. And he thought it was going to be a tackle, and it wasn't. And that should have been looked at. I think it was a penalty. I think it was just a push. It was, it should be, I think Lekeway pushed Rodrigo. It should have then been a penalty.
I think there's a bit of a VAR protocol that they get wrong with this. And I know this would cause controversy, but I think you actually get it right. You know, sometimes they'll dispute it offside where they don't put the flag up, but we all sort of know it's offside. And then the striker gets clattered. I think, and then they immediately give the offside.
Yes.
I think they should give the penalty and then give the offside. Because basically what you're saying is there was a foul because now we'll go and check the offside. But I think that's the case in this one. If he'd thought, has the question, is that a foul on Rodrigo or not? And if it is, give the penalty and then we'll go and check the offside.
Exactly.
And then they would have checked the offside. And in this case, they'd have said, no, actually, look at that, Vesca's played it. So therefore, my decision of penalty stands.
I was amazed the game restarted. We want quicker VAR involvement. But it was a relatively big decision. So the Barcelona disallowed goal confused me and confuses most people, I think, who genuinely tend to believe that they have an understanding of the offside law.
Yes. Shall we crack on to Girona? Actually, I think it was easily the best game of the weekend, didn't they? It was good. As I was saying at the top, Terry, it's good to have fun Girona back, isn't it? So we've been a bit worried about them last couple of weeks. I mean, this wasn't easy, was it? Betis, 3-2 against Betis. Dogbic in the goals. William Jose turned up. And then the old man, Stuani, for the 1 millionth time, popped up with a late goal.
Yes, it was a shootout, wasn't it, between centre-forwards? Classic old-school centre-forwards. Big, strong number nines that play up front, back to goal. So William Jose gets a couple, Dobby gets a couple, and then Stuani, the oldest of the lot, comes on and gets one. So it was good. Again, it was pouring down with rain. sympathies for Girona supporters. We have to clarify that the reasons for the celebrations, I mean, that they celebrate every game at home that they win, and rightly so, but this was more excessive than normal. They have they've literally qualified for European football next season on the back of that 3 points. So it, whatever competition they're going to be in remains to be seen. But that did give them, I think, says so much, you know, 27 points above Betis, I think it is. That they, so they finish in the top seven, top eight. I haven't clarified it yet. Just,
right.
But that was the reason why there was not over the top celebrations. I'm not the celebration police. but it was explained to me that that 3 points officially gets them European football next season. So huge congratulations to Girona. They were better again in this game. Betis. It's interesting. Dobrik got two. William Jose got two. Courtesy of David Lopez, with an absolute nightmare. So he's delighted that Stuani, his old mate from Espanyol, and now Girona, of course, got him out of trouble with a winner in the 91st minute. But it's just they're fun to watch. And then, so all those players scored those goals. And guess who got MVP man of the match in this match? Isco. His team lost. And the players scored two goals each. Stuani comes off the bench. Sometimes that man of the match might on the bench. Someone comes off the bench and scores a goal and gets in. You go, yeah, okay. He's probably not man of the match, but decisive player. He comes on, super sub, blah, blah, blah. But Isco got man of the match again. I think Isco's got more man of the match awards this season than I've got in a 15-year career. And I like Isco. I think he's great. He was good in this game. Betis played their part in this game. Pellegrini has some problems to solve because I don't think the results that they're getting recently give off a lot of confidence that he, you know, he's the right manager for this group of players. It's a talented group, really talented, an attacking lineup from Betis, but they do have some issues, and to think they're, you know, that many points behind, they're 23 points behind Girona. And you look at the money invested in Betis' group, squad players compared to Girona. So Girona, it was clearly the best event of the weekend in terms of the games played. Yeah. And a hugely important win for Girona to put them back above. Well, temporarily, they're third, aren't they? Atletico jumped up to the fourth again. But you know, there was concern Girona were getting caught by Atletico and Athletic. So massively important win for Michel and his team.
Yes. So Villarreal 1, Atletico 2. Sorry, a bit of a glitch. And it was a... that's why that was Monday night, which is why we're recording Tuesday, by the way. After a decent game in which both teams scored again. And I thought a really good finish. We're talking about Rodrigo's finish. I love Saul's finish on calm to win the game.
Well, he's a left-footed player, so the ball, his tendency and instinct is to allow the ball to run across his body onto his left foot. Whereas I think, it sounds stupid saying this, and I will admit it, it probably should have been a right-foot finish. But if you're a left-footed player, you've got that confidence and you want that to be more assured that you can finish with your left foot. So he lets it run across his body, and then the quality is on the finish with the side foot, precision with some decent pace into the bottom corner. It was the only way he was going to score. So it was a fine goal. I didn't understand. I know when people are saying he's had a tough time and everything, I was looking around trying to think, well, what's happened here? And I think he was getting some criticism from the supporters. He's very much a one-club man. I know he spent a little time at Chelsea on loan, but he's grown up as an Atletico player. And he went on, I understand he went on social media saying that he admitted that he's... It got quite serious, quite deep, I think, from sort of his mental point of view, that he is aware that he's not playing well. I noticed it, to be honest. I thought if you'd asked me in general, I'd say he's having a decent season. He's having an impact at Atletico. They haven't been brilliant this year, but I wouldn't have put the problems down to Sal, and I think when he's played well. So it was pleasing for him if he's having a tough time mentally. Which, you know, a lot of players do. If you're not playing every game and you're, you know, the type of person that cares as much as he does about him, his performances and the club he plays for, So that was the reason why I'm saying he's had a tough time, because I think he's come across clearly that he is, you know, trying his best and wants to give his best. And his teammates were pleased because it was a win, but they were pleased because it was his goal. And he's a good player. And, you know, it was an excellent finish. It was a good game. Atletico were really good in the first half. Villarreal were much better in the second half. Not better than Atletico, but much better than their first half performance. I think it was heading towards a draw, which I don't think would have been the most unfair result until Sal pops up and gets the goal. Interesting couple of short corners, Witzel near post corners, which we don't ever see anymore. You see those stats come up whenever there's a corner being taken on La Liga. It's quite useful. That's 60% average, it seems, about the middle of goal. Mm-hmm. Very little near post corners. Witzel, Atletico still do it. Flick on from him to score the first goal. Morata hits the bar in the second half with a similar corner. I'd like to see a return of the dink to the near post and a flick on them, either a goal or a teammate knocking it in at the far post. So Atletico weird though. Every time I tend to turn away from the television in the second half of an Atletico Madrid game and go, where did he come from? Who's gone off? So it was an half-time substitution, Savic for Riquelme, which is a weird one, which then meant Witzel moves into midfield. But I forgot he was a midfield player. And then I'd look at somewhere else, I'd pop out the room and come back and go, oh, Correa's on. Oh, where's Memphis gone? Where's Griezmann gone? It's Simeone just can't resist making change after change. I know we're allowed for five substitutions and he's entitled to use them all, but there are games where you're thinking, yep, don't leave, just leave it. You're winning. You're doing okay. And he makes a change and it Villarreal equalise. Danny Parejo, just before the goal from Sal, missed an absolute sitter. Set up perfectly. Alex Baena with a great run. Probably should have shot, but ends up running out of room and a marvellous back heel towards Danny Parejo, who's running onto it. Penalty spot. And he blazed it over the crossbar. And then within a couple of minutes, Atletico get the goal and take 3 points. So yeah, the fine lines there between Villarreal winning it and Atletico winning it were clearly evident on that.
Yeah, and they're fourth for now. Obviously, there's this issue of the extra Champions League place. I don't think Spain are in for that. I haven't checked, actually, to be fair. I should do. Because obviously, if the clubs do well still in Europe, but I think the clubs in the lower competitions have sort of let them down this season in terms of getting that fifth place. I mean, I think it's a weird thing because
I do.
How desperate are, you know, because if Real Sociedad are better in Europe, Athletic Club might qualify for next season's Champions League. So yeah. I'm not sure they particularly want that to happen. Because again, you know, Spurs could finish fifth and be desperate for Arsenal to win the Champions League. So, and you say, well, why? Well, okay, fair enough.
Why not, if it's extra Champions League place, why not just keep it at the nations in the Champions League? So therefore, Spain have got three in the last eight.
Yeah, I think
they haven't got anyone in the Conference League or the Europa League.
It's more making life easy for the clubs, the nations that have already got all the advantages. It seems to be the main focus of every decision made. Arrasate going, Terry. I put it to Henry, one of our Patreons, who's the Ipswich Rojillo, and he was gutted, absolutely gutted that the best manager that he remembers as a Osasuna supporter, just it's achieved so much, and probably sort of thinking that Arrasate probably thinks that's all he can do with the club. My additional thought on this is that the law that says you can't manage two clubs in La Liga in the same season.
Yes.
I think it sort of forces your hand sometimes in this situation, because jobs keep coming up, like the Sevilla job comes up a couple of times a season at the moment, and he can't get it, of course. Whereas if you are available and have a good record in recent seasons and you're available in the summer, you're far more likely to get your job, aren't you? Your next level job.
Yes.
So what do you make of, do you share Henry's disappointments? Slightly fearful for the future of Osasuna? What's your thought?
No, I do. He has done an outstanding job, and I agree totally with what you've just said. So it might not be the job comes up for him in the summer, but there will be jobs that come up during the season, as you say. If you're not in a job already, you can get that opportunity. It's Mendilibar got a severe job, didn't he, on the back of not being managing that season. And Arrasati has done a fine job. Where I would differ from Henry is that I think the club is in great shape.
Yeah,
and they have a really good squad of players. So I think as long as they
yeah, I think I added the word fearful, by the way. So I think he's just gutted that he's going.
Gutted. Yeah. I understand that, but I would trust them to make the right appointment. It seems a very well run club behind the scenes. They've assembled a really good group of players. The production of young players coming through the system is, as always, fantastic. And I think it's a job that they'll get a decent manager for. Lovely stadium, knocking around to qualify for European football. I'm not sure who's going to get it. Perhaps they have someone already at the club that they think might be the right option, which often is the case. But it's, I was surprised when I heard the news that Arrasati had chosen to leave.
Yeah.
But I understand, you know, perhaps he's grown into that job. He's grown into the job as a manager because, do you remember when he got the Real Sociedad job? It was too early.
Yeah.
And times you watched him then, you looked bewildered on the bench. Everything was flashing by far too fast for him. And he took the Osasuna job and he got them promotion, I think.
Yeah.
It's been there so long now, from modern day football. And now they're challenging for European football. We tip them every year for, you know, possible, you know, Europa League contenders. But I think they've got really assembled a really good squad. It's a well-run club, and I think they'll make a good appointment. So it's it's parting of the ways is a little bit unusual. I mean, Ruby left Almeria, didn't he? And we all thought, what on earth is he left there for? Now we've seen why he left with the season that they're having this year. Incidentally, I'm not sure what happened. So Ruby, is he?
Where is Ruby?
Else?
I don't know. So we're looking up while we're... Tell me about this game.
It's a really good job, didn't it?
Performance by Almeria, which, we were talking about the bounce last week. Actually, all season we've been talking about Almeria not being as bad as their league position suggests, but their opening 10 minutes of this game was as bad as their league position suggests.
It's a shame that they got their win and there was an international break. That's the one thing I'd say in their defence. So 2 week gap between the next match when they beat Les Palmas and they were going for 2 weeks and then they come into this one and it's the mistakes early on were just ridiculous. So they're 2-0 down after 9 minutes. One of the goals is a little bit controversial. It probably slipped by. It was a bad back pass from Edgar. I think it's the second goal for Budimir. It's miles wide of the goal and the keeper should have just let it go out. But he doesn't. He tries to keep it. He saves the corner. It looks, I think the ball is out of play, but he then knocks it back into play. It's squared and Budimir taps in. So it was classic calamity defending behaviour from a team that's only won one game this season. So I think we all accept they were down anyway, but Osasuna made light work of it. I know he spent the first goal after 2 minutes, the second one was 9 minutes. It was just a bit of a shambles from Almeria.
Yeah, I think Ruby's not in a job, by the way, to answer the previous question. So, well, not that I can see looking at his Google and Wikipedia.
And we haven't heard him. His name has been forgotten. When there's been no, he has been linked.
That's the danger for Arrasate, isn't it? And you know, I know you sort of need to. This is when they start appearing on telly in the UK, isn't it? They sort of John Coleman, the former Accrington Stanley manager, was on Sky on Saturday afternoon, Monday afternoon, doing a game. Just like, I'm still here.
Sorry, I'm laughing of you.
John Coleman was on Sky doing the goals roundup stuff. He was doing the Middlesbrough game. Yes, I hope he's back in management soon, John. So let's do the rest of the games. We've got five games to go, Terry. We've got three goals to talk about.
The headline, the superstar Ramos.
Let's do that.
Controversy over. Did he touch it or not? It certainly
He's having it for certain. And it's on his birthday, wasn't it? A slip of a lad at 38, yes.
his scripts. He just sits there and must write them himself. It was a big win for Sevilla. How they got the win, I have no idea whatsoever. They were totally outplayed. They were outpossessioned by Getafe. 67% possession to Getafe, 33 to Sevilla. Getafe had 572 passes, Sevilla 283. Numbers, they've been outnumbered in terms of shots on goal, 18 shots from Getafe, 5 on target, so they probably could be doing better than that. And Sevilla got the win, desperate win, desperately needed this win, you know, as things transpired. Friday night, Cadiz got the win, so that put them under even more pressure. But they dug deep, and Ramos scores one. He has one disallowed. He could have scored another one as well from set pieces. It's a huge win for Sevilla. It's interesting. My wife follows Sergio Ramos and his family on social media. And she said, have you seen Ramos this week in training? Because the international break. The bloke's an absolute animal. He's a beast. You've seen him. It looks like his house. It's a big complex. I'm assuming it's his house. He's got the dumbbells, barbells. He's running up and down the steps. He's really full of admiration for him. At 38, with all that he's achieved, literally everything you could achieve in football, for him to still be grinding it out on a daily basis to ensure that he still gets to play at the age of 38 at a high level, hats off to him. I mean, he's got the more money he needs. He's not doing it for the finance now. He's doing it for his love of football. And yeah, I'm a massive fan, always have been, Sergio Ramos. I know a lot of people don't like him, but yeah, to respect what he does, and at the age of 38 he's in great shape, and hopefully we see him next season on his 39th birth playing for Sevilla. So Sevilla in this game, Kike said Sanchez Flores, controversy about Sanchez Flores, the subject of racist abuse. I was flummoxed to do with his gypsy background. So that he was abused by Getafe supporters. He came out after the game and said that he was proud of his gypsy heritage. And so it's a different slant on racist behaviour. It's just irritating now that it's not going to go away anytime soon. It hasn't gone away in the Premier League. It still happens in other countries in Europe as well, but it's certainly got better, and Spain is going to have to come to terms with the fact that there are idiots about all over the world. And if we all come together to try and defeat it and eradicate it, that's going to be the way forward. So if people are behaving like morons, then other supporters have to point them out. They have to, you know, grass them up, snitch, you know, and work together to try and eradicate it. So it's something that's happening on a regular, yeah, far too often now.
Yeah, you've got to be relentless, haven't you, in your pursuit of it, condemnation of
it.
It
will never go away, but it you can make it a whole lot better.
Yeah. But again, we had Vinny in the international break again, cropped up again, didn't it? You know, and it's not, you know, you've got to be relentless, you've got to stop it, you've got to keep on top of it. Alaves 0, Real Sociedad 1. Good result, actually, for Real Sociedad, given, you know, they're not exactly flooding us with goals at the moment, are they? But they you know, given their recent results, they it's three in a row, actually, isn't it, to be fair? So,
yeah. Disappointed with Alaves in this one. They celebrated about 3 weeks ago. I was out in Spain working for La Liga TV. And they celebrated after a game, and that I was thinking, what was they went 10 points clear relegation. It was a home match. They did a lap of honour, and it was almost as if we're safe. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not safe. And if they continue to play like this, it's going to be a struggle. I mean, they're 7 points above Cadiz now. I think at that stage, they were 10. We're 10 to play, and it was a big celebration. I said, well, no, you're not. Well, you're doing well. You're heading in the right direction, but premature celebrations, and that is the case now. And I think they'll be okay, but they need to play better. They need to show more ambition than we saw in this match. I thought that we would because they do have a, you know, the comfort of a decent advantage, but they're still playing
some tough
quite
games negative. To come as well. You know, Alaves, because they've got Granada away, right? Should be a relatively easy win, shouldn't it? At the moment, you'd think, but maybe not. Then they've got Atleti to play. They've got to go away to Valencia, Girona, Real Madrid. That's not a lot of, you know, that's some tough games. And then they play Celta, so that could end up, it's like you can view that one as a six-pointer, and suddenly they are in it, aren't they? Given that also,
that is 32 points isn't enough to keep you up. No. I don't know why they were celebrating 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And because Cadiz just said he deserved to win it. Pacheco with his first ever goal for the club. A decent win for Real Sociedad, but I was more disappointed with Alaves in this game. The home team, and they were, Real Sociedad had better players and a better team, but they just rolled over for Real Sociedad in this game.
Yeah, Cadiz won. Decent little run for Cadiz. It was a really important one, wasn't it? The edge had to beat Granada.
Yes, and one of those players that's frustrated me all season, and he keeps getting picked. You know, Sergio picked him on a regular basis, is the goal scorer, Robert Navarro. I saw potential at Real Sociedad, but he never got enough game time. I think he's only on loan, I'm not sure. And he keeps getting picked for every game this year, and I've been disappointed with him because I saw the potential at Real Sociedad and I haven't seen it at Cadiz. And since Pellegrino's come in, I'm beginning to see it, and I get now why he's playing.
Right,
and he took his goal really well in this match. They have decent players, Cadiz. It was a must-win game. They did that. Still got a lot of work to do, but there are teams that they are capable of catching above them. It wasn't an easy win. Granada, again, one of those teams that have only won twice, and Jose Ramon Sandoval coming in now to try and rescue things. He's not going to be able to do that with 14 points that they've accumulated so far, but they're competitive in every game. But Cadiz, it was a must-win, and they got the 3 points on Friday night.
Yeah. Celta 0, Rayo Vallecano 0. So those two are only a couple of points apart. So therefore, a disallowed goal. That was really important, wasn't it? The Jailson one. I can't remember if you told me beforehand or afterwards. I can't really mention it. But I don't know why it was disallowed. I sort of have a theory because a Rayo player goes down, doesn't it, as the ball's coming early. Blows very early. And I think there's just a collision, but I'm not even sure it's a Celta player who collides with a defender. So I don't think it's Jailson who's penalised.
Yeah, it's one of those where the Celta player, I can't remember, it might be Carlos Perez, he puts his hands in front of him, I'm trying to describe this, if you're not seeing it, to stop colliding with the defender. I think the defender's coming back towards him. It's across, must have been a corner because so many players are in the box. The ball's crossed into the penalty area and it's going to go over the heads of most of the players that are in the vicinity of the ball. And it's just one of those, you know, when someone steps back onto you, and you put your arms on their back just because they don't know you're there. It was one of those. There was no force in the push, but the two hands go on the back of the defender who goes down. There was a tangle with his own teammates as well.
I think so,
go down. But there's no genuine shove in the back that pushes a player over. I couldn't push you over like that. Mm. If I touched you on the back and fell over. So I thought that was hugely important, that decision. And as you said, the whistle went quickly. Celta scored a goal. It's disallowed. The game ends up 0-0. The point does Rayo a bit more of a favour than it does. They're five above Cadiz. Celta are three above Cadiz. Especially it's the bar. Celta should have won the game, but didn't. And Rayo inching their way to safety. But they are one of those teams, Rayo and Celta, obviously, that Cadiz believe they can catch. And, the current form, yes, you know, as I say, if you're Celta and you're 3 points above, you've got a problem now.
Yeah. Valencia 0, Mallorca 0 was one of these ones, Terry, where one of the patrons asked us about how useful XG is. And what happened with this one, I didn't see it live at the time. I had a look at the XG, I had a look at the 3 minute highlights and thought, you know what, I'm not going back. I'm not trawling back through it. So was I wrong? Should I have
Valencia
gone back?
Valencia's XG should have been pretty good, to be honest. Our recollection is that the Mallorca goalkeeper, we have to explain, is Dominic Grief. I'm not sure the pronunciation, is their cup goalkeeper. And because we had that run of cup games on a weekly basis for about, I'm guessing about six weeks, wasn't it? Every week, you know, the early stages of the competition, bang, 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 bang. The cup goalkeepers were getting matches. So they were in form, they're match sharp. Then all of a sudden, the semi-finals are done and dusted. And the two cup goalkeepers, Giri Zabala for Athletic Club, Dominic Greif for Mallorca, haven't played for about a month, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So both managers this weekend decided the cup goalkeepers needed a game to sharpen up. And Mallorca's goalkeeper, Dominic Greif, was outstanding in this game. It's the only reason Mallorca got anything from this match. You know, Valencia pummeled them. But Greif made save after save. There was one absolute sitter from young Peter Gonzalez.
After Greif made a follow-up.
He hits, just mishits the finish, which was an open goal.
So
that was the big chance for Valencia. But I thought it was all down to the goalkeeper. The only reason this game was nil.
Yeah, it comes down. You know what the interesting point about the XG 1.49, which doesn't seem it's not that high. When you mentioned that that Peter chance, actually that was high. Grief. We'll find out one of these days.
It made 5-6 really good saves.
It made 5 saves. So
exactly. Yeah. I didn't have the stats then, but I'm watching it, thinking it. Yeah, because he's Rajkovic is the league goalkeeper. Greif has been at the club longer, but had massive injury and health problems, and suddenly is showing everyone that Mallorca can't keep these two next year. It's a waste. So someone could pick up a decent goalkeeper from Mallorca. My suggestion would probably be Greif because Rajkovic has played more. But they've got two good goalkeepers there, Aguirre.
Yeah. And thoughts, quick thoughts, Terry, on Copa del Rey final. A thought you'll win it?
I would make Athletic Club favourites, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I love the spirit that we've seen from Mallorca. It's a massive game for these two clubs. Athletic haven't won it since 1984.
Yeah,
I haven't checked that when Mallorca last won it. But it's a massive, massive event. You know, for one of the it's not one of your traditional teams, is it? Athletic are. They're always there or thereabouts in Copa del Rey. That's why I'm surprised they haven't won it since 1984.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, if it'd been Athletic Club against Barcelona or Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid or Sevilla or Valencia, Villarreal, all those teams. But Mallorca really focused on it to the detriment of their league campaign, I have to say. But it will be, I'm looking forward to it. If I will find it somewhere. And just irritating that it's not on telly here, and I'm not commentating it because I wouldn't fancy throwing one of the if one TV company does pick it up late, and they go, oh, we'll give it to one of our contract co-commentators. There you go, get on with Mallorca. You might get away with Athletic Club.
Yeah,
chuck in Mallorca. Let's see who's an expert on Mallorca. Okay, fair enough. Let's see. It's going to be frustrating. I don't often say that I should be on something, but. It's annoying that it's not on in the first place. And it's a game I would love to have worked on in the UK, but it's not on.
Right. Okay. Test your expertise then, Terry. Mallorca have won the cup before. 2003, that was their cup. Players included. Leo Franco was the goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
They had a legendary defender who was a club legend. Albert Riera was playing for them. Ibagatha, Walter Pandiani scored. They beat Huelva in the final, which does tell you that the Copa del Rey was regarded a bit differently back in those days. And two goals in the final for a player who went on to do great things. Let's work out how old he was. So he was born in 1981, so he'd have been 22 at this point. And let's have a look. Was he on loan? No, he'd left Real Madrid and he later joined Barcelona.
Oh, Sammy.
Sam Buleto. we are the last of Pandiani 1, Eto 2, for the Mallorca team. That's not bad, is it? That's not a bad team, that Mallorca team then, is it?
Yeah.
Nadal was the captain for Mallorca.
He started his tennis career.
Yes. Yes. Right. You can work that one out for yourselves, everybody. Right. So we'll be back. Obviously. Hang on. So there's no La Liga this weekend.
No.
No. Yeah. So just double check that. Yeah. But yeah. So.
Absolute bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have done a Friday game, Monday game. They could have had some early Saturday games and could have had a round of games on Sunday. And God forbid, play two games at the same time.
Yes, yes.
They could have had a 4-hour gap between, you know, yeah. They could have finished at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Finishers could finish at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Yeah. So everyone has got 4 or 5 hours before the cup final.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, there we are. So basically one La Liga game, which is Thursday night, which is the catch-up, the missing game, isn't it? Granada-Valencia. So at least we'll be all caught up by the time we come back again. Right, so we'll be back and talking about Champions League, I guess, next and also the Copa del Rey final. So we'll be back at some point, and we'll be back with some La Liga at some point in the next couple of weeks. We can't be any more firm than that. Anyway, so enjoy it all this weekend, everybody, and we'll see you soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support.